True, but... She paused, not really wanting to delve into this topic further, knowing it threw up lots of other questions. But now I don't. Well, go ahead any time, he said, holding out his mobile. Or use the landline by the till. Don't expect an answer, though. Louisa always complains that she has a far more intimate relationship with Joe's voicemail than with any man. He chuckled at that, a warmth filling his eyes as he said her name. Clara headed to the phone, tapping out the number she'd scribbled on a scrap of paper. As predicted, it went straight to voicemail, a smooth, confident voice filling her ear and asking her to leave a message. She almost missed the beep.
Hi, my name's Clara. I'm staying... Well, your mother asked me to tell you that I'm staying in her flat, while she's away in Madrid. I'm going to run the shop. I think she tried to call you.
A robotic-sounding woman's voice cut her off.
You have reached the end of this message. Please press 1 to re-record.
Clara was so startled she hung up.
Oh, she said, backing away from the phone.
All okay? Gavin asked, sitting on a stool staring into space, cloth hanging from his hand. Clara nodded, knowing the message hadn't been a big success, but not wanting to leave a second one for fear of sounding like an idiot.
I'd better go and pack up my things.
I'll help you down with that bag, he said, following her up the narrow staircase, ducking to avoid the beams above his head.
It looked heavy.
It's no problem, Clara called over her shoulder, realizing she hadn't even had a shower that morning, aware that her hair was filthy. Gavin's wide shoulders and bulky frame filled the stairwell. She felt the walls closing in as she fumbled with her room key, the low ceiling and dark beams pressing down.
"So you only have the one room?" she asked, searching for something to say.
"Just the one. No cause for more,"
Gavin said, edging closer to a door nearby as he talked. Clara had a strange feeling that he was nervous. She jerked her head at the long corridor.
"There seemed to be a lot more," she said, catching a flash of something as he pulled the door shut. The click of the old latch loud.
A swift turn of a key in the lock.
"No, no, just private use, you know," he said, double-checking the lock, shifting his eyes left and right, unable to look at her.
Clara wondered what was behind the door. She felt the atmosphere shift, Gavin's easy nature morphing into something else. The tension was there in the silence that surrounded them.
"Well," she said, trying to reclaim the previous mood, "it's a lovely room. I had a very good sleep. Great mattress," she added, diving into the room to remove the banana as fast as she could.
She wanted to clean her teeth after the sugary carrot cake, but with Gavin standing outside waiting for her, she was in a rush now to get out of there. He took her bag, indicating that she should go on ahead, quickening his pace as they passed the closed door on the way down. Clara suddenly had a terrible image of a previous guest tied up and gagged, waiting for rescue, something to explain his edgy behaviour. She paid her bill in silence, thanking him as she turned to go.
"Here, take this," he said, waving a voucher at her, utterly relaxed again now they were back in the bar, the previous atmosphere forgotten. "It's for steak night. Tuesdays, steak and a glass of wine for £10. We serve food on Tuesdays and Saturdays."
"Oh, thanks," Clara said, accepting it and tucking it into her jeans pocket.
"Sounds good."
He insisted on shutting the bar and walking back down the high street with her, shouldering her backpack as if it weighed nothing, pointing out old shops, giving her some of the history of the place. His eyes crinkled as he recounted the time he and Louisa had ice skated in the car park of the village hall, how she'd fallen and he'd almost put his back out catching her. He was chuckling, lost in the past.
"Thank you," Clara said as he passed her the rucksack outside the front door of the shop.
He left with a last wave, and she lugged the bag up the stairs to the flat. She wasn't in the mood to unpack, though. Could feel her curiosity pulling at her, wanting to get down and see the shop. She clattered back down the stairs, trying one of the keys in the door that led off the hall.
a side door into the shop. Pushing her way in, she searched around for a light switch. The shutters pulled down on the window meant the shop was in darkness. She wished for her old mobile then, the ability to make it a torch so she could find her way around. Ow! She yelped into the space, her calf hitting something sharp. Finally, her fingers found the promising feel of plastic, and she flicked down a switch, then another, until various strip lights hummed into life, revealing every corner of the shop. It was full to bursting with stock, displayed in the most haphazard way. Shelves were crammed full of dolls, jigsaws, cars, oversized wooden letters and numbers, board games. There were wire baskets overflowing with various goodies. Neon footballs, large foam hands and soft toys. Clara wandered down the aisles, marvelling at the number of items. Some things hidden behind others, boxes that had fallen down at the back. A thin film of dust on some of the shelves that made her wonder when they were last looked at. It was a riot on the senses, almost overwhelming in its garishness. It reminded her of a mismatched aunt, surrounded by a dozen bags crammed with things, multicoloured shawls draped around her neck, large beaded necklaces clashing with diamante earrings. She switched off one of the lights to dull the effect as she continued her search. The till was towards the back of the shop, set on a counter that was covered in paper, receipts, key rings, candy bars, pots of pencils, lollipops, and more. It made Clara's head ache just looking at it. A calculator poked out from below a pad, doodles on every sheet, parrots, cats, lots of flowers, stars, hearts, eyes, and G's of every size. She moved past more shelves at the back, frowning as she saw myriad boxes stacked behind each other, all containing different things. She tugged on the handle of a cupboard in the corner of the room, the door sticking. It opened with a groan, and she moved into the small space, reaching up to pull down some of the items on the top shelf. Beautifully carved wooden pieces, dust dulling their colours. She ran a finger along the back of a stunning rocking horse, his mane falling over one eye, his body painted in exquisite colours. As she moved around the cupboard, a thought sparked inside her, the idea growing as she looked deeper. She felt her stomach tighten, her fingers itching to get started already. A smile had formed as she closed the cupboard door, ready to make some drawings of her own, pausing only briefly, distracted by another door across the way. She moved towards it, pushing it open and gasping at the enormous space that opened up before her. She was just about to walk inside when she heard the sound of knocking. A hand flew to her mouth. Turning, she saw Lauren, nose pressed against the pane of glass in the side door. "Sorry, did I frighten you? You left the door open," she explained, pointing behind her. "Then I saw the lights on." "Did I? Oh, that's dreadful. It's my first day as caretaker. I'm hopeless," Clara said, her heart still racing from the shock. "Caretaker?" Lauren cocked her head to one side. "Long story. Well, there's nothing much to take in the corridor. Apart from leaflets for pizza delivery, and I suppose if they brought along their own screwdriver, they could make off with the coat hooks. Effort, though," Lauren mused, looking at Clara and grinning. "Sorry, I was just walking to pick Rory up from nursery. He does a few hours every day now." "Am I a terrible person for admitting that sometimes they're the best hours in my day?" Clara smiled. "Of course not. I can imagine you'd need the break." "I do need the break," Lauren said, following Clara into the shop. "That series of The Crown isn't going to watch itself." Clara laughed. "I haven't seen it." "It's historically very accurate and interesting, and you learn lots about the royal family, and also Matt Smith." "Do you mostly watch it for Matt Smith?" Lauren hung her head so her strawberry blonde hair fell forward. "Yes. I don't know him. Not sure he's big in Denmark. We're more into Viggo Mortensen. Clara raised an eyebrow. Are you saying you've never watched Lord of the Rings? You are missing out. He was Aragorn.
Isn't that all about elves? Lauren's nose crinkled. I'm not really into pixie folk.
He's not a pix... Look, he's good-looking. Take my word for it.
Lauren was already distracted anyway, had picked up a large foam finger from a basket and was putting it on. I wonder if Rory would get the message better if I wore this when I'm telling him off.
Not sure it would have the desired effect, Clara admitted, looking at Lauren and her oversized hand.
This, however... She pulled out a plastic policeman's helmet and popped it on her own head. This could do it.
Lauren nodded. Definitely. It would give me that extra authority.
She pointed a hand in front of her as if signalling traffic.
So, are you looking after the shop?
Clara nodded. I'm house-sitting for Louisa and running the shop in return.
How brilliant! Yay, a friend! Lauren said, waving the foam finger around.
I want to open it up, Clara shrugged. But first I need to do something to attract attention. And, well, she felt heat fill her face, removing the policeman's helmet as she said, I think I've got an idea. Want to hear it? She felt lighter climbing the stairs back to the flat. She'd spent the rest of the day in the shop after Lauren left, feeling buoyed by her reaction. She'd started sorting through the stock and had only called a halt when her stomach had rumbled so loudly she thought she had set off some vibrating toy. It had got dark already and she pushed open the door to the flat, nudging her rucksack out of the way. She knew she needed to sort the flat out, but at that moment all she had the energy to do was get ready for bed. She obviously made a mistake by not acknowledging the parrot, who called out,
Is it because I is black? Is it because I is black?
As she made her way into the bathroom. She stood in the doorway, smiling at the sight of the large iron clawfoot bath littered with towels. She whisked around the room as quickly as she could, piling up towels, clothes and more into a heap for washing and scrubbing the enamel. Searching the bathroom cabinet for something suitable, she reached to the back for a glass bottle of rose-scented oil, pouring droplets into the bath and hearing the clank of the pipes as water gushed from the tap. As the bath filled, she unearthed a tea light from a side pocket of her rucksack and, lighting it with the flame from the hob, sat it on the windowsill, turning the bathroom light off so that the room now flickered with shadows. As she stepped into the bath, she felt the silkiness of the water, the scent rising off the steam, felt comforted by the yellow glow of the walls. Resting her head back, she felt her muscles unwind, giggling as Roddy the ginger cat padded into the room, immediately curling up in the middle of the heap of towels. Clara shut her eyes, enjoying her first bath in over a week. It was the thing she missed most about her old home. Many bed and breakfasts or hostels only had showers. This was blissful, she thought, as she allowed her brain to slow down, returning to the day's discoveries, the shop, her plans. Then the fog cleared, and one single idea leapt out at her so strong that she found herself lurching into a sitting position and fumbling for a towel. Stepping out of the bath, hair dripping onto her shoulders, she left the bathroom and walked across the flat, too focused to think to find her slipper socks, rushing back down the staircase to the shop, practically dropping the key in her excitement to get back in, knowing where she was headed, what she wanted to see. She passed the till and the cupboard in the corner, and then pushed open the door to the back room. It was a large room with two bay windows, window seat cushions lost underneath piles of paper, looking out over the square of garden outside. Even in winter the lawn looked lush and green, bordered by hedges and pots filled with evidence of flowers and herbs. A large table sat in the middle of the room, chairs scattered around the edges, and Clara walked around it slowly, skirting empty cardboard boxes and broken toys, and leaving wet footprints on the floor as the idea that had begun in the bath became fully formed. This was it, the heart of her plan, and she felt a familiar fizz of excitement. She bit her lip, impatient now to get dressed and get to work.
Louisa? Louisa?
Clara froze in the doorway of the room as the voice echoed in the space.
Louisa?
She moved tentatively through the shop, towards the voice. Just as she emerged through the side door and into the corridor, an eye appeared in the blank space of the letterbox.
Louisa, is that you?
Clara said, pulling her towel tighter as the eye swiveled her way.
You're not Louisa, the voice said, stating the obvious.
The letterbox snapped closed again. No, Clara said, feeling stupid talking to the back of the door. The letterbox opened again.
Who are you and where is Louisa?
The eyes were outlined in black coal and were narrowed in suspicion. Clara had a sudden urge to laugh. She stepped across to the door, her bare feet cold on the tiles of the hallway.
Hold on.
She pulled on the latch and opened the door to find Roz standing there, one arm behind her back, the other hand smoothing her auburn hair. She pointed at Clara.
Your hair is wet,
she said, as if Clara wasn't aware.
I was having a bath, Clara explained, feeling absurd lingering on the doorstep in a towel.
Not wearing knickers was a surefire way of making her feel vulnerable.
A bath?
Roz arched a thickly pencilled eyebrow.
Do you want to come in? Clara said, desperate to get back to the flat and into some clothes.
She was already assessing the best way to climb the stairs without flashing her first guest.
I wanted to speak to Louisa, Roz said, folding her arms across her chest.
She's not here.
And who are you?
Clara frowned.
I'm Clara.
Well, Clara, when will she be back?
Back?
Louisa.
Roz tapped a long nail on her palm in impatience.
Oh, she's gone, Clara said. Spain, you know, like she said last night.
Roz's eyebrows lifted.
She left.
That seemed to unfreeze her, and she marched across the threshold and straight up the stairs, leaving Clara to close the door and run up after her. Roz was standing in the doorway, her face twisted as she took in the carnage inside the flat. Louisa's belongings on every surface, Clara's rucksack spilling its contents on the carpet, Roddy's orange hairs covering everything else.
You are the weakest link, goodbye.
Lady Carcar was parading up and down her perch, looking at Roz, head thrown back intermittently to shout the words. Clara stifled a giggle with one hand, the towel slipping just as Roz turned, so that she found herself flashing one breast at her. Oh, dear, she said, covering her escaped boob, the Anne Robinson impression still on a loop behind her.
Sorry,
how can I help? She asked, not doing very well at disguising her giggles. She hiccuped.
You haven't explained what you're doing here. Have you broken in?
Clara hiccuped again.
Broken? No, of course not, she said, drawing herself up to her not very substantial height.
Louisa asked me to house-sit for her, look after the animals, she said, pointing at Roddy, who was curled up in the middle of the bed in a nest made of tie-dye clothes. And Lady Carcar, who was now shaking her foot out, ruffling her wings.
No likey, no lady.
Clara pretended she hadn't heard the parrot, feeling the sides of her mouth twitch again.
So she's just swanned off and left the shop to fester, has she?
No, no, actually. I'm going to open it up, Clara said, her previous excitement bubbling up, her smile wide.
She was about to launch into an explanation, her latest big idea. She wanted to share it with someone. She knew it would work. She was about to start when Roz cut her off.
What do you mean, open it up? You can't just open it up. How absurd!
Clara snapped her mouth shut.
You don't know a thing about it, and I'm sure even Louisa wouldn't just hand over the keys and the till.
She paused,
looking at Clara as if she was about to slope off with a massive bag labelled swag. To a total stranger? Clara was too shocked to interrupt. A breeze from the open door was making her skin break out into goosebumps as she watched Roz park herself on a bar stool at the kitchen counter.
It's outrageous. Bad enough that she's just left, but handing over the shop to a nobody, someone not from the village or even England.
Roz arched an eyebrow. Clara wrapped her towel more firmly around herself. Was her Danish accent that obvious? Did others see her as a stranger? She thought of Louisa whirling around the place. Had she really stopped to think? Had Clara bullied her into a rash decision she would live to regret? She felt her previous certainty that she was doing the right thing shaken as Roz continued to talk.
I wanted to discuss things with her. If she's not going to run the place, well, I'm not talking it through with you. When is she back?
I'm really not sure, Clara said, feeling her fists curl as she stood in bare feet watching this rude woman stomp about the flat.
It's so typical of her. No thought at all, just swanning off, leaving the rest of us to pick up the pieces.
Clara noticed a red light flashing on a side table behind Roz, as if emphasizing her next sentence.
And now you want to open up the shop without her? It's preposterous. You have no idea what this village needs, no idea at all.
I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to work it out, Clara said, drawing herself up to her full height as she readjusted the towel. She wished she was wearing clothes. She'd be taken a lot more seriously in clothes. Roz sniffed.
I'll leave you to it, then, she said.
As she passed by the kitchen counter, she dropped a slice of carrot cake into a piece of kitchen roll and folded it up.
She won't be needing it, she said, not having the decency even to blush.
Striding across the flat with one last sharp look at Clara, she headed to the door.
Nice to see you nice, shithead, squawked Lady Carcar.
When Clara heard the door below bang shut, she rushed into the bedroom to quickly towel-dry her hair and find her clothes, pulling on every layer she had to warm herself up. What an unpleasant woman! No wonder she'd fallen out with Louisa. She was utterly vile. Well, Clara wasn't giving up because of this setback. As she pulled a jumper over her head, she was distracted again by the red flashing light. It was an answer phone on the table, an old-fashioned one attached to a wire that led into a half-closed drawer and to the missing phone. A red number 3 blinked on the small screen. 3 messages. They must have arrived while she was in the shop. She pressed the button, searching quickly for a pen and paper to write down any messages for when Louisa returned, stepping back when she heard a booming male voice fill the room. The smooth, confident man from the voicemail earlier, who now seemed a lot louder and angrier. Lady Carcar had started yelling,
"Master of the house! Master of the house! Love Island Joe!"
So Clara struggled to hear the first few sentences, but there was no mistaking the tone of the message.
"I don't know who you are, but you can't just leave a message saying you're living in my mother's flat after packing her off to Spain. I haven't even spoken to her yet, and running the shop? We don't know you, and..."
The offensive message continued, but Clara had heard enough. She sank onto a bar stool, her head dropping onto her chest, her arms heavy. Did no one want her here? She felt gloomy as she let the voice ring around the flat. Then she thought of Lauren's reaction, Gavin, the toys downstairs, the ideas she had. It wasn't all hopeless. And she'd seen the village. It needed something to change. She wanted to help. She needed to help. She lifted her head and spoke into the silence. "I'm not going to just give up," she said. And a scream from above added,
"Do you feel lucky, punk? Well, do ya?"
Chapter 6. Joe slammed the mobile down on his desk. No reply and another message left. What had his mother been thinking, just leaving like that without any kind of warning? He rubbed the sides of his head with his thumbs, massaging his temples and trying to focus on the screen in front of him. London was lit up in the window opposite, the East End below, people milling in pubs, moving to restaurants, bundled up against the cold. He could make out the outline of his own reflection in the glass, his tie loosened, his jacket over the chair, his sleeves rolled up. The central heating in the office was always set to tropical, and he felt beads of sweat on his hairline as he threw himself down into the chair. He'd ordered them all dinner. It was being couriered over, and the team were due back in any second. They'd have to eat it at their desks, as Joe had lined up a big night ahead, going through the finer details of the deal they needed to pitch first thing. They needed this one. It was big. He pictured his bonus check a few weeks away. This would swing it. A strip light overhead was humming. Dead flies collected beneath its glare, their dried-up bodies incongruous in the pristine office. He should call maintenance and get them to remove them. His hand hovered over the internal phone. Well, they should all be here, so why not? He pressed the number for reception and got them to redirect his call. He knew they'd have to come running. An MD called up in this company, and it was more than your job was worth to ignore the request. He felt a flicker of satisfaction. Purpose. Pam appeared at his desk.
I've finished the filing for the hash merger, and have franked all the mail to go out first thing, she said, looking back at her coat draped over her desk. So if that's all...
Joe leant back in his chair, pen in his mouth.
You've done all the filing, and typed up the minutes from the meeting today. You've proofread Mercer's report for Andrew. It'll need triple-checking.
She nodded at each sentence, unable to help another glance back at her coat. She'd been here all day, arriving just after Joe. He knew he should let her go, but the anxiety was making him edgy, needing everything to be absolutely right. Pam was a steadying influence, a mother figure. He could rely on her.
You'll need to be in first thing. We're going to be here all night, and there'll be more to proofread. 5 o'clock sharp. I can send the car again.
Pam's face fell. The lines around her eyes deeper than he remembered. The grey at her temples obvious now in the glare of the strip light. The sight jolted him, and he remembered Matt telling him about her new grandchild. He should ask her. He should let her leave early another night to be with her family. They were just so busy.
The car would be good, thank you. There's no tube at that time, she said.
Joe nodded brusquely, glad to see half his team arrive in the lift behind her.
Mercer, Adams, anything for Pam before she gets off for the night?
He asked it quickly, Pam spinning around, perhaps dreading the next words. Mercer, a rotund guy with chubby cheeks and a barreling laugh, looked across.
Nothing from me. You have a good night on the tiles, girl.
Adams, wiry, quiet, and bespectacled, shook his head.
Thanks for staying on so late, Pam, he said, causing colour to edge into her cheeks.
Joe waved a hand.
The car will take you back, he said, turning to Mercer and Adams. I've ordered from Nobu, but don't think it's going to be all sushi and caviar. We've got work to do.
Mercer's smile dimmed.
Never, boss, he said, removing his jacket.
Adams was already turning on his computer screen.
I'll bring the numbers I worked up earlier.
Joe felt something easing in his stomach as he looked around at the desks. It wasn't that he'd been lonely, he thought. They had to be here. This deal was important. Another bank could sneak in and steal it from under their noses. Still, he couldn't help a small smile as he saw the reflection opposite. 3 heads leaning over computers. More voices in the room. Chapter 7. She'd needed to get out. Had been talking to herself for the past hour, muttering Danish obscenities as she replayed the conversation with Roz, rewound Joe's answerphone message again and again. She had bundled into her coat and walked back along the high street, stamping out her anger as she puffed out cold air. She noticed the old-fashioned street lamps in the high street for the first time, glowing orange in a sea of grey. The shop receded into the distance and she headed to the only place that was open, windows blazing. Pushing into the pub, she was surprised to see the bar empty. The enormous fireplace was swept but unlit, the tables polished, but there were no coasters on the surface, no glasses, and no customers. Gavin appeared, humming to himself, from the staircase to the rooms above, stopping quickly when he saw Clara standing in the doorway. "Where have you been?" "You're smiling," she said, feeling lighter on seeing him. He had such an open face, his ruddy cheeks reminding her of her dad's back home. Well, she needed to write to Dad, she thought. He liked her to check in, despite having his hands full with her young twin stepsisters. Gavin's smile froze and he glanced back over his shoulder. "Nowhere," he blurted, slamming the door to the staircase shut, a shudder tearing through the bar. Clara's eyes widened, wondering what it was that she had just said.
"You don't want to stay, dear. It's just I haven't had the room cleaned yet, and the other room..."
He trailed away, Clara becoming more and more confused. He had definitely said there was only one bedroom up there. "The other room?" she said, inching forward.
"No other room, I meant," he said.
She watched a red stain creep up his neck, over the top of a tattoo she couldn't make out.
"It's okay, I'm not staying," she said,
and it seemed to be that comment which reminded Gavin where she'd been all day.
"Hold on, why are you here? Don't you have a house to sit in and a shop to run?"
Clara had propped herself up on a stool and was scratching at the counter with a nail as he moved behind the bar watching her. She nodded her head.
"I do." "Well then."
She paused, took a breath.
"Do you think Louisa really wants me there?"
The sentence was out in a rush. Gavin frowned.
"What do you mean? Of course she does. She gave you the keys, didn't she?"
"She did," Clara said, scratching the counter again, the earlier doubts starting to subside. Gavin was right. She hadn't misread things.
"I was just worried that maybe I'd bullied her into it."
He snorted.
"Have you met Louisa? Woman couldn't be bullied into anything. She once chased a UKIP councillor down the street with an umbrella."
Clara found herself smiling.
"What's happened? Earlier you were so sure about it, and now all this?"
Clara bit her lip, not wanting to tell him about Roz, about the voicemail from Joe.
"Nothing. Just being silly."
Gavin reached underneath the counter and pulled out a glass, shoveling some ice into the bottom and reaching to spray lemonade into it.
"Here," he said, pushing it towards her. "On the house."
The kind gesture almost made her well up. She hadn't realized that she needed reminding that people cared.
"Thanks."
She took a sip, watching him tie an apron behind his back and bend to start stocking one of the small fridges, the glass beer bottles clinking as they butted up against each other. She could feel her muscles easing, the sugar from the lemonade racing around her veins and renewing her energy. She was just about to ask about the argument the previous night, the history between Roz and Louisa, when the door opened and a blast of freezing air swirled around the bar. Clara longed for the huge fireplace to be lit, or even the radiator to actually radiate heat. Then she heard the voice and felt a cold hand grip her insides.
"You again?"
She snatched a look over her shoulder, hoping that it was just her imagination. But no, there she was again, same suspicious expression, lips stained a deeper red, a long black winter coat making her look like death itself.
"I was just going," Clara said, stumbling off the stool and hitting her knee on the bar.
"Ow, Lord!" "What did you call me?"
Roz said, still standing in the doorway with her coat buttoned to her neck.
"I didn't. It was Danish for...
It's a swear word, but it wasn't at you. It was at my knees, see?
I don't know what my knee is. Is that Danish for something obscene, too?
Roz, let it go, Gavin called.
No, my knee, not Minnie, Clara repeated slowly.
I thought she would have gone by now.
Roz spoke as though Clara wasn't there. Gavin's mouth puckered.
Oh, I see. So you've had a few words, have you?
Clara found her eyes darting around the carpet, at the threadbare patches, coloured swirls, the legs of chairs and stools.
I'll just be off.
She wasn't in the mood to get another dressing down from Roz.
Finish your lemonade, Gavin growled.
This menacing edge was new, and Clara found herself slipping back onto the stool. She hadn't been too keen on the idea of walking past Roz in the doorway anyway.
Now, Roz, coming or going? He asked.
I'm not thirsty, she said, sniffing and turning on her heel.
The sound of the wind picked up as she moved back outside, Gavin's mutterings lost as the door finally closed on her. The room seemed to hold its breath until Clara bit her lip and looked back at Gavin.
So, to answer your earlier question, someone might have had a word.
She found herself telling him everything. Roz's visit, Joe's message, as he topped up her lemonade and then added vodka.
I think she wants to talk to Louisa about something, but she wouldn't tell me what.
Gavin sighed, taking out a stack of coasters and littering them along the bar.
She's been after the shop for years. She put in an offer ages ago, but Louisa pipped her. Roz has always been desperate to get rid of her, and as you saw, they're not exactly bosom pals.
No, I, picked up on that, Clara said, a small smile escaping.
And the fate? What happened at the fate?
Oh, that. Gavin stopped what he was doing.
Yes, that was unfortunate.
There was a disagreement over the judging of the most moist cake, and somehow Roz's entry fell. She had it out with Louisa, who had been judging, by the coconut shy, and a few of the coconuts were just within their reach.
Gosh!
Yes, it was quite spectacular. For a thin woman, she has an excellent arm. But it wasn't just the cake. Roz and Louisa have been on and off with each other for years. Planning permissions rejected, some row over a shared fence.
A gentleman I think they both rather liked.
He coughed at that part.
It just sort of exploded that day.
Literally. He leaned over the counter towards her.
Come on, Clara. You were so excited earlier. Don't let her stop you.
She's all right, really, Roz. Bark a lot worse than her bite. She just likes things as she likes them.
She doesn't like me, Clara pouted. That's her loss, he grinned. And look, I got this earlier.
He wiped his hands on his apron and reached for his phone by the till, holding it out to show her a text from Louisa.
Found fabulously pretty house-sitter for Lady Carcar and Roddy. She's going to run the shop, poor lamb, so be sure to visit her lots, as she'll get lonely. But if anyone can do it, she can.
The message made Clara smile, heat rushing into her cheeks at the compliment.
Oh, and she did have an S, and she hit the triple word with sung. 42 points.
Gavin smiled fondly at the phone.
So, you can't go, he said, coughing and tapping the screen off, placing the phone back by the till. She's relying on you. You promised.
But what about Joe? His message was so... Gavin put up a hand.
No, no,
no. It's not anyone else's decision. It's Louise's, and she wants you there, and that's the end of it. Clara's mouth was still open.
Now, do you want to live there for a bit? Gavin asked her.
Clara nodded.
And do you want to run the shop?
She paused, thinking of her earlier plans, her head nodding quickly.
So that's settled, Gavin said, clinking her glass with his. You're staying.
A woman appeared from the staircase behind, hair tied back with a knotted headscarf.
"Hold on, Gavin. I've put it back like you said I..."
"That's great," Gavin said, lurching towards her, blatantly cutting off the rest of her sentence.
"I'm sure you have," he added.
The woman looked at him in surprise.
"Well, I'll be seeing you next week, same time," she said, moving past him.
Gavin nodded quickly.
"Same time, yes, same time."
Clara watched this bizarre exchange in silence. The vodka had gone straight to her head. Food seemed like forever ago. Who was this woman? What had she been doing upstairs? Gavin was puce when he returned to the bar after ushering the woman out into the street. They'd stood under the porch for a while, Gavin handing her something, and then she'd left. Clara was about to ask what it was all about, but found the question freezing in her throat as she looked at his expression.
"Well," she said, stepping off the stool and pushing her empty glass across the bar. "I'd better get going, then."
Gavin couldn't meet her eye, was scrubbing at the spotless countertop.
"Thanks for everything you've said," Clara said, hoping he'd look up and smile at her.
He flicked his eyes over her face.
"Not at all," he said, his voice low. "My pleasure. You come back in here soon."
At last he looked up properly, meeting her eye. Clara wiped the puzzled expression from her face and gave him a small wave.
"Shall do. And I'll see you in the shop. 2 days, okay? Come along in 2 days' time. I've got a surprise."
The thought made the walk back a lot quicker. She let herself in and rushed straight through to the shop, where she pulled out one of the oversized wooden numbers, a large number 2, which she placed in the window to the side of the shutters, grinning as she did so. Tomorrow was where it was all going to begin, she thought, as she climbed the stairs. Tomorrow she'd unpack, deal with the carnage of the flat and everything else. She wouldn't think about Roz or anyone else who didn't want her here. She was going to make a difference. She didn't notice the answer phone this time. She didn't see the red 4 blinking into the darkness. She was just dropping off into the deepest sleep when out of the silence she heard,
"My precious, shithead!"
At least Lady Carcar was pleased to see her.
"Z-E is not a real word, Gavin, and why do you always have the Z's, X's, Q's and J's when I'm left with 6 vowels and absolutely no hope of using them? I'm sorry I left in such a hurry, but I really couldn't wait around. I knew you'd talk me out of it, and I needed to escape. I'm so glad Clara is taking on the flat. Lady Carcar does enjoy company. Perhaps she will pick up some Danish. Roddy, of course, won't notice that anything has changed. Do be sure to remind Clara that he adores salmon fillets with sweet chili sauce, and there are lots in the freezer. Madrid is a hoot. I'm right in the centre of things, so there are dozens of shops and squares and outdoor cafes serving tapas. I have eaten so much paella in 24 hours I feel like I am now half woman, half prawn. I've been walking everywhere and starting to get my bearings. The galleries are something else. I adore all the art and have convinced myself that I should now retrain as a surrealist painter. I feel that style might suit my personality. You know how I like to experiment in the kitchen? This seems the painting equivalent. No one thought bacon, syrup, and chocolate sprinkles would work until I pulled out my fabulous chocolate surprise. I had to look at lots of Goya, as he is a local lad, so to speak, but his pictures are all rather dark and terrifying. I think I'll stick with telephone lobsters and men with apples for faces. I'm writing to you from the cafe outside my hotel as I smoke from a shisha pipe. It's only raspberry tobacco, so don't have heart failure. This is no Amsterdam. Later, I'm planning to drag myself back up to my room. I have a small stone balcony that I can sit out on as gorgeous Spaniards, a lot of swarthy Heathcliff types, walk by with beautiful women draped on their arms. Then I'll get dolled up and head out into the city for a night on the tiles. Chapter 8. She changed Louise's sheets, the new cream duvet cover smelling of lavender washing powder, the duck feather pillows impossibly soft.
She had unearthed the softest grey cashmere rug from the top of the wardrobe and had draped it over the duvet. She lit a candle by the side of the bed, pulled out a dog-eared novel from her rucksack, and nestled down under the covers. Despite the haven she'd created, however, she barely slept, woken by the ideas tugging at her, Roz's disgruntled expression, Gavin's kind words, everything batting back and forward. She yawned as the sunlight leaked through the edges of the curtains and the blind above her head. Lady Carcar looked at her in disgust. She quickly covered her mouth. Bleary-eyed, she stood in her woolen slipper socks, hands wrapped around her mug of coffee, and started planning the day ahead. With lilting country music playing out of Louise's record player, she set about tidying the flat, packing away clothes, piling up ironing, scrubbing at the bathroom and kitchen, dusting and polishing until the whole place sparkled. When she eventually stopped, her stomach was growling, her arms were aching, and she was in desperate need of a shower. When she emerged from the bathroom, she felt lifted, the flat already seeming bigger, a smell of bleach underpinning everything else. Later she would give the place a few personal touches, but for now she popped the last of the carrot cake in her mouth and made a mental note to go food shopping. Lady Carcar raised one eye at her as she approached, growing increasingly fretful as Clara grabbed the handle on the top of the cage. "Come on, girl," Clara soothed. She decided to take the parrot downstairs so that she had company in the shop.
"I'll be back."
She descended the stairs, surprised at the weight of the cage, hearing Lady Carcar's wings as they hit the bars.
"There's no place like home," the parrot called out repeatedly.
"And I'm not taking you away from it," Clara puffed, putting the cage down outside the door to the shop and turning back towards the stairs.
"No likey, no lighty, no likey, no lighty."
"We're going to have fun," Clara called over her shoulder as she returned to the flat to tempt Roddy down with a fresh bowl of food.
The cat had moved from bed to rug and back again, but had barely shown a flicker of interest in doing anything else. Food wasn't working, so Clara produced a piece of wool and dangled it in front of him. He stared at her as if to say, "Do you think I'm an imbecile? It's wool. You need to get a life." Then rolled over onto his other side to stare at the empty wood burner instead. Clara had to pick him up and carry him down the stairs, grappling with the key to get the door open. On seeing the cage, he panicked. Lady Carcar was about the only thing that got him moving, and shot out of Clara's arms and into the shop, scratching her in his haste to get away. Alarmed at seeing her following him inside carrying the cage, he made a beeline for the opposite end of the shop, parking himself in the middle of a pile of princess dresses and nestling down for another nap. "Right," Clara clapped her hands together and smiled at them both. "Big day," she announced.
"It's good night from me, and it's good night from him."
"Not quite the attitude," she said, disappearing into the cupboard to unearth a hoover and a cloth. The next few hours were spent finishing sorting the stock and then cleaning and tidying. She stacked any mismatched stock neatly away in the cupboard and lined the shelves with toys, prices displayed on colourful labels. Dragging a stool across the room, she strung up bright polka dot bunting, then hung some pictures she'd found leaning against the wall in the back room. An enormous framed clown with a bunch of coloured balloons in his hand, a juggling duo, a ringmaster, and an elephant. A mirror on the wall behind the till made the whole place feel bigger, and she grinned at her own reflection. She mopped the floor until the black and white squares were spotless. Moving across to the counter, she piled all the stray pieces of paper into one bundle, which she placed underneath the till. She wiped the counter down and propped a couple of toy trolls next to the till, their neon hair sticking out at every angle, then looped the bunting along the counter, smiling as she stood back and admired her work. Looking up at the large clock hanging over the door, she stared at the time, her stomach grumbling as if it had just worked out that she'd skipped lunch. With no car, she realized with a sinking heart that there was only one place to go for supplies if she wanted them now. She shrugged on her coat, wrapped a scarf around her neck, and huddled into its warmth as she walked the few paces to Roz's post office next door. The shop was crammed full, the only light coming from the smeared window and a flickering bare bulb. Magazines were displayed in a rack on the wall. Newspapers were stacked in piles on the floor. Shelves rammed with various essentials lined the opposite wall, and an island in the middle was stuffed full too. Clara quickly grabbed a few things, holding out the edges of her coat to act as a makeshift basket. She could sense Roz watching her from a stool behind the counter, the occasional sigh making Clara cringe. Were they going to have another row? Perhaps she should just starve instead. She felt the scrutiny as she piled the items up next to the till, Roz's thin mouth practically disappearing as she scanned each one.
"So you're staying," she said pointedly, looking at the spread in front of her.
A loaf of bread, a pint of milk, a jar of marmalade, a cucumber, and a packet of sliced ham.
"Yes," squeaked Clara, determined not to be bullied.
"Staying," she repeated, paying with her card.
"Where's your bag?" Roz raised a penciled eyebrow. 5 pence, if not."
"Oh, I forgot," Clara stammered. What was it about this woman that made her nervous? "Right," she said, spilling change out of her purse as she searched for one of the tiny coins. Roz looked disappointed when she produced one and slid it across the counter. Clara scurried out, the bag bulging, cutting into her hand, feeling Roz's eyes burn into her back through the glass shop front.
"Clara!"
Lauren waved. Clara stopped, heart still pumping from her shopping excursion, vowing to make a large online order that night on Louisa's ancient-looking desktop computer.
"How are you?"
Lauren asked, huffing to a stop in front of her, cheeks pink from the cold and with a large faux fur hat on her head.
"I'm fine. I'm great, actually. Just in the middle of sorting the shop," Clara gestured, feeling the tension drain away.
"That's great! Look, I'm rushing to pick Rory up from nursery, but I'll pop in later and we can have a play date. Oh, God, I mean a coffee. Sorry. Too much mum chat. Not a play date. I won't make you get the Lego out or anything."
"Well, maybe Operation, as I actually really like that game, though it is bloody hard. I always kill him off when I go to take out his Adam's apple. So disgusting."
"Right," Clara said, unsure what she was talking about.
"I'm not sure we have that game in Denmark.
Lego, though. We love Lego."
"Oh," Lauren said, waving a gloved hand. "Of course. Look, I really must dash. Mrs. Stevens always gets pissy with me when I turn up late, like she might be about to call social services, so I better go."
"Run," Clara giggled. "I'm in the shop whenever. Just pop by. I'd love to have coffee."
"And is your plan going smoothly?" Lauren asked.
"Yes, it's coming together," Clara said.
"How fab! Yay! I can't wait to see it. And so glad you're staying on in the village," she called as she half-walked, half-jogged away.
Clara watched her leave, her straight, glossy hair streaming out as she turned down a side street. She smiled, feeling a glow from the promise of a new friendship and a renewed flicker of excitement at the project awaiting her. She turned to head back inside, but just before she did, she paused outside the shop, looking at the white shutters still pulled down over the windows, the burgundy sign above. She knew what she had to do next. Chapter 9. Clara fell into bed that night, utterly drained. The sheets were cold, but she was too tired to jump out of bed to get her socks. She wrapped the duvet around her, waiting to warm up, her back aching, her hands red raw from cleaning and polishing and assembling things. The wood burner in the flat needed wood and kindling, and she made a mental note to add that to her online order. She had barely been able to lift Lady Carcar's cage back up the stairs to the flat. Roddy followed moments later, but only because Clara had opened another tin of cat food. What would people say? She could barely sleep with excitement, as if she were a child again and tomorrow was Christmas Day. What would they say when they saw it? What would Gavin and Lauren and Roz think? She pictured the children in the village, their faces aglow under woolen hats. She bit her lip, feeling a sense of focus fill her. She had been wandering for a few months now with no real purpose. It seemed like fate to find herself in this village, knowing she might make a difference. She squeezed her eyes shut, willing sleep to come so that she'd be bright and perky tomorrow for the big day. It seemed like only moments later that the alarm clock was ringing next to her, and she was stepping out of bed, hopping from one bare foot to the other as she located her slipper socks and Louise's dressing gown and fuchsia fleece. Sticking the kettle on, she raced to get ready, even finding a moment to put some mascara on, her blue eyes glittering back at her in the small bathroom mirror. It was time. Downstairs, she had positioned herself on a chair near the counter and was finishing her second coffee as she watched the clock above the counter move to 9 o'clock. Then, with great pomp and ceremony, she pulled up the shutters so that winter sunlight flooded into the shop, shining on her new window display. It seemed to look even better in this light. She had brought out the old wooden toys that she had found in an unloved heap in the cupboard, cleaning them, scrubbing at the coloured wheels, the brightly painted wood in purples, greens, vivid reds. She had found jigsaws depicting countryside landscapes and had glued these up to create a patchwork of fields and sky. In front of this backdrop, she had placed wooden train tracks, curving around and above each other, wooden puppets resting in groups watching the tracks, wooden animals by their side. Now, with her breath held, she picked up one of the train carriages and placed it at the top of the track. Letting go, she watched in delight as it set off, triggering a chain of events so that the display was a moving feast for the eyes. She returned to her chair, unable to sit still as she waited for people to stop outside, watching curiously, the children wanting to come in and have a go themselves. She hopped to her feet once more, hovering by the counter, her heart lifting with every movement. With the burgundy facade, the jigsaw puzzle backdrop, she knew the front of the shop looked enticing. The clock's hands moved round. A man in a suit passed the shop on his phone, but his eyes didn't flicker from the ground in front of him. An elderly woman pushed a tartan-covered trolley past on the other side of the street. A pigeon pecked at the pavement just outside, not interested in the wooden attraction above him. Clara sank into the chair. No one. No one had stepped inside the shop in an hour. By 11 o'clock she felt bereft, returning to the flat to make another cup of coffee. Not even Lady Carcar calling, "I'm the king of the world!" could raise a smile. She picked up Roddy, pushing her face into his soft fur, the cat purring in contentment. She had been sure people would come. She walked half-heartedly back down to the shop, feeling all her plans slither away. No one came into the shop. She ate her ham and cucumber sandwich on her stool, her mouth dry, the time moving hideously slowly. She moved the trolls on the counter. She moved them back. Pacing quietly to the back room, leaning against the doorframe, she felt the lack of sleep catch up with her. She had planned to work on this room tonight, knowing that her ideas for it might transform the shop into something wonderful. Now she wondered if she should spend the evening in the bath, reading a book, a candle flickering, blocking out all the hopeless feelings. She was so deep in misery that she didn't hear the bell above the shop door tinkle, suddenly becoming aware of a babbling from somewhere behind her. She spun round, seeing Lauren standing in the centre of the shop, turning with her mouth open. Rory was clutching her hand, tugging on her arm.
"Look, Mama, Mama, look!"
"Clara," Lauren breathed, "it looks great. You've transformed the place." Clara felt heat in her cheeks as she moved towards her. "I haven't even started yet," she said. "I had all these plans, but..." She felt the disappointment of the morning wash over her. No one came. No one cares. Louisa was right. Even as she spoke, however, she could make out figures on the pavement outside. Small groups huddled, one face pressed against the glass, her little mouth a rounded O.
Nursery's just finished, Lauren explained. Rory dragged me in here. He adores trains and the display is amazing.
Train, train, train,
Rory babbled, toddling to the front of the shop.
I can show you if you like, Rory, Clara called, following